Hey, all you growers out there, Jordan River here. Thanks for tuning into GrowCast today. Quick reminder, we got another giveaway going on. The Purple Caper Seeds giveaway was great, but we already got another one rolling. This time we're giving away a trim bag. That's right, Trim Bag has partnered with us. We're a big fan of that partnership, and they're kind enough to give away a bag to one of my listeners. So go to growcastpodcast.com/giveaway to enter. It's just that simple, free to enter. growcastpodcast.com/giveaway. Today we have Dr. Coco on for the diagnosing episode. We teased this episode for a while, but here we are, and it's a really interesting take on diagnosing. I'm not sure it's exactly what you're expecting, but it's going to be very informative, and I guarantee it's going to change the way you think about your plant's issues when you run into them. Before we get started, let's give some love to one of my favorite partners, Rooted Life CBD, everyone. Just go to rootedlife.com, rootedlife.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off just for listening to this show, and members of mygrowpass.com get 20% off their premium CBD. Are you confused about how to use CBD? Are you overwhelmed by the amount of product choices out there? Of course we are. Well, Rooted Life is here to help. Their mission is to simplify the CBD experience. Why turn to Dr. Google for information when Rooted Life's team of cannabis specializing advisory doctors oversee their vast and comprehensive educational program? They offer high-quality third-party lab-tested products that contain minimal ingredients as any wellness supplement should. Always produced from hemp grown in the U.S. Don't wait any longer. RootedLife.com. That's Life, L-Y-F-E. Promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. MyGrowPass.com, saving 20% off the Rooted Life CBD. Shout out to AC Infinity, our brand new partner. You'll hear about them later. Loving everything that's going on with the podcast and the membership. So many good things happening. GrowCastPodcast.com/action to see it all. All right, everyone, let's jump into the show. I know you're excited to listen to Dr. Coco. So without further ado, thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please tell a friend about GrowCast. Make sure you're subscribed. Give us a rating and review. Also, check out our other shows, The Homegrown Helpers, for more cannabis growing talk with Rob Smith, and my other show, The Coffee, Health, and Science Podcast. You know to check it out. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you all. Dr. Coco, back on the line, the powerful Dr. Coco. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Jordan. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing really good. Things are crazy. I'm in the middle of the move, but I'm kicking butt. Everything's going really, really well. How's it going over on your end? How's Coco for Cannabis? I know you got the New Year's, not the New Year's Grow Challenge. I know you got the 420 Grow Challenge coming up.
Yeah, no, we got the, on 420, we're starting the Spring Auto Flower Challenge. And we got signups just started for that. So if you're interested in growing with us, I know you've talked about being interested in growing with us, Jordan. So,
I'm in. I'm going to join
you're
that.
In. Full steam Everybody ahead. Wants to grow with Jordan and I and a bunch of other growers. So yeah, we're going to start signups. We're doing primarily auto flowers. We're going to organize it into breeder groups. But we'll also have a photo period group for those that are still want to grow their photo period strains. We're still putting together the groups this week, but we've got signups going. So come on over to Coco for Cannabis, cocoforcannabis.com/challenge, and go ahead and sign up for the Spring Autoflower Challenge, and you'll be on our mailing list and be able to stay up with all the updates with that.
Love it, man. Excited to be a part of that. Maybe we could do like a, I know we touched on autoflowers versus photo periods, but maybe we could do an episode around April where we really dive in deep to like, just, you know, specifics about them and then maybe how to grow. Like someone asked growing both at the same time. I don't know. We'll do a follow-up episode before that challenge starts.
Yeah. We'll probably get some. I mean, I've ended up doing that by mistake growing both. I mean, it wasn't my mistake. It was whoever sent the seeds mistake growing both autos and photos at the same time. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, I grow autos once a year in this Spring Autoflower Challenge. And it's really cool. Different. And it's kind of a fun experience. So
that's cool.
And you know, growing together is a lot of fun. In the New Year's Grow Challenge, which is going on right now, actually, we're about to flip. I'm going to flip my plants with a bunch of the growers in the New Year's Grow Challenge on Valentine's Day here on Friday.
Nice. Lovely.
And yeah, we're giving away Atlas Plant Trainers this week in the New Year's Grow Challenge. Nice. So We've got a lottery going on, and yeah, you know, so it's fun. All you got to do to be eligible for these prizes that we do in our challenges is just, you know, keep a journal and participate and
that's
go
cool,
along
man.
With us.
That's really cool that you're offering prizes. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. Maybe you'll win one.
no way. I would not accept that. There's no way.
It's just
Rob is my
fun.
Partner.
I'm really enjoying having, you know, we got, I just made the list for eligibility for the Atlas Plant Trainer contest, and there's 200 growers that are keeping journals right now in the New Year's Grow Challenge.
Yeah, that's not bad odds.
No, yeah. Well, you know, we got two Atlas Plant Trainers, so you got about a 1% chance.
For just entering for free, keeping a journal is worth it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's actually going to be a little bit better than that because you have to actually have, if you keep your journal updated, you get a better chance to win. So
oh, that's cool. I like it, man.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. We're really enjoying the challenges. And, you know, I published it was on last week. I'm not sure exactly when this episode's going to drop, but I was on last week talking about the new light articles, and those are proving to be really popular. So got a couple of new articles on how to evaluate and compare different grow lights and the article on how much light do you need that really gets into the science of you know, horticultural lighting and the science of cannabis photosynthesis. To answer a bunch of questions that growers have, so
yeah, people were loving those. I shared those in I shared those in a Facebook group, and people loved them.
Awesome! Thanks for spreading the word, man.
For sure,
yeah, we got this new grow light calculator that we've been working on for a while, and that should be coming. It might be done this week. I keep making it a little bit more complicated for the developers, a little bit better, hopefully, in the end for the users, but. It's coming really soon, and I think that's just going to be an awesome new resource. So.
Cool, man. Love it. Keep an eye out for that. CocoForCannabis.com. If you haven't checked it out already, go check it out. My listeners know and love you, though, Dr. Coco. It's one of my favorite collaborations. Today is diagnosing. How long have we teased this episode? 8 weeks? 12 weeks? It's time to do it, my friend.
I hope nobody's been sort of watching their plans die while they're waiting for this episode to drop.
Oh no, we're finally here. We're talking about diagnosing. And that's really something that I think has evolved, Dr. Coco, because I feel as a collective, growers are getting better and better. Like the collective consciousness of growers is improving, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm just really interested to see how it's changed over the years. But you tell me your underlying principles, your general principles on how to approach diagnosing a plant that may have problems.
Yeah, you know, I think when you have a plant that has problems, I think you should start by thinking about what you're doing as a gardener, and sort of what are the things that you could potentially be doing wrong. And there's a lot of differences in different media, in different grow styles. So, you know, I think that growers get too concerned with trying to pinpoint a specific diagnosis sometimes in terms of like a specific micronutrient or macronutrient deficiency or toxicity or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where I really suggest when you start having problems, you need to think about the media you're growing in and the style that you're growing. And you know, what might be some of the things that you're not doing well or that you could be doing better for the plants. And there's you know, I organized it basically into like five different things to think about and be aware about as you're sort of experiencing a plant with any kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And just to sort of run those off, mm-hmm. you could have a climate issue. You could have a light issue. You could have a pest issue. A root issue or a nutrient issue.
Yeah, that really covers it. Yeah.
Yeah. To sort of think about, you know, where your problem might lie within those. And we could get kind of a little bit deeper and think about what some of those problems are. But it's really important to note that different media and different grow styles really are going to have different potential problems. I mean,
yeah, wildly different.
For example, if you're growing in like a water only super soil, then you really may end up with a specific nutrient deficiency because you just don't have enough of that specific nutrient in your soil blend. That's not going to happen if you're using sort of, if you're fertigating, if you're using nutrients in your watering solution. If you're growing in DWC or if you're fertigating in cocoa, you're not going to end up with sort of a specific micronutrient issue as long as you're sort of following along the right plan, following along the nutrient recipes.
Right.
And yet most growers still try to diagnose their plants that way. They try to get in and think about a specific deficiency or toxicity. And, you know, diagnosing plant symptoms is often pretty tough. It's tough in person. It's
even tougher
when you're
on the
looking
internet.
At pictures that people post. It's really almost impossible when all you're doing is like hearing a description of it. And it's almost sort of silly to think about specific symptoms in a hypothetical sense. Beyond getting into sort of like thinking about what the specific symptom is, to sort of step back and think, okay, how am I managing this as a grower?
Yeah, it's a totally different approach because usually people just jump right to the deficiency chart pictures and start looking for things to manage. But I like what you're saying, which is basically reconstruct it. Be like, okay, let me take a look at my climate. Is that on point? Let me take a look at all these five elements.
Right.
Is that on point?
Right.
And I want to jump back to what you said before because back in the day, it was so easy to help people on forums because everybody was growing in soil and everybody had lockout. So they would post some deficiency and you'd go, are you flushing? And they'd say no. And then you say you have lockout and you explain what it is and they thank you and they move on. That was like my job for like a year and a half.
Advise them to flush.
I feel like people, I feel like that's not as common anymore.
Still is the right answer.
True.
But it's not always the right answer.
It's gotten more complex because I think growers have gotten better and now they're proposing questions that are a little harder to, you know, they're closer to stumpers. So yeah, I do like what you're saying though about the five different elements and I'd like to go into each of them if you could.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let's do it. So the first thing that you really want to think about is your climate, right? If the climate's getting too hot, that can cause a number of issues, actually. It can sort of cause wilting in the plants. It can be related to, or it can cause if you're fertigating, it can cause the electrical conductivity to be too high because of excessive transpiration and excessive evaporation. That can lead to signs of nutrient burn, which, you know, isn't really related to the nutrient solution as much as it's related to just the heat. And it can, you know, running too hot can cause other problems with photosynthesis and sort of slow the plant down. So some of the problems that you'll notice with wilting or even EC burn, the tip burn that growers often call nutrient burn, that can just be caused by being too hot and creating sort of too concentrated a solution because of evaporation and transpiration.
So that makes perfect sense.
Start by thinking about, you know, your climate, and that's an easy one. You know, are you running too hot? Then try to get it cooler. And how's your relative humidity sort of balanced against your heat? You know, we did the episode on vapor pressure deficit, and those two factors are a really important thing to try to manage. And, you know, I think if you haven't listened to that, I think that was a good episode.
People love that one, man.
Yeah, we really dived into those issues and how to sort of manage the climate and think about the relationship between heat and relative humidity. Relative humidity, if it's too high, it can lead to problems with mold or with mildew, especially white powdery mildew. It can also slow the plant down. You can get some signs of wilting from having high relative humidity. Or if the relative humidity is too low, that can lead to burning your plants again for the same reason that heat can burn your plants.
Is that transpiration?
Right. A lot of those climate issues, if you're really suffering them, can be solved by airflow or at least mitigated by airflow. I believe we touched on this in the VPD episode as well. If you really can't create the right climate in terms of heat and relative humidity, if there's too much humidity in particular, you can sort of resolve that or help mitigate that by increasing airflow.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like if there's a heat wave, the best thing you can have is an AC, but the next best thing is a fan. Like air exchange is definitely helpful in that sense, and humidity as well, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, keeping the air moving, what happens is stagnant air will develop a boundary level effect. So the air that's right up sort of around the leaves will be a much higher relative humidity than the air elsewhere in the grow space or elsewhere in the room. And so you literally want the air moving to sort of knock that boundary level off and continuously sort of expose the leaves to new air. So yeah, it really can help if you're dealing with a high relative humidity.
That's cool. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. The problem there is wind burn. So if you get too much wind on your plants, then you'll notice, you know, clawing and sort of
twisting
or even tacoing. And growers sometimes try to diagnose that as some sort of other issue. It may just be related to the wind hitting that leaf. It causes excessive transpiration from that leaf, and that leaf sort of twists and tacos and whatever else it's going to do as a result of that. Mm-hmm. If it's really localized and you don't think it's affecting the parts of the plant that sort of you care about, it's not really an issue you have to avoid. But if it's damaging canopy leaves, then you should reduce the...
Right, if it's physically destructive. Yeah, totally.
But if you have a fan blowing up underneath and some of the undergrowth is getting windburned, that's not sort of as big of an issue.
Nice. Love it, man. Great overview.
The first thing when you have a problem is make sure you got your climate dialed in. And, you know, I mean, this I'm sort of coming at this from quite a lot of experience in chatting with growers in my chat room about problems. And they'll come in with problems. And we'll be talking for a while. And, you know, half an hour into the conversation or something, they'll be like, oh, yeah, well, I've been struggling to keep it below 90 degrees. And I'm like, oh, okay, we should have right. started with that. Like, that's the problem.
It's almost
right?
like now you have like a prerequisite list of, all right, forget about the nutrient right. chart you've been looking at. Let me ask you the following questions.
Yeah, I mean, I basically do, right? A little kind of, I mean, it's more mental than anything. I kind of had to write
a little interrogation,
down about this episode, but... Yeah, to have that sort of checklist that you go through and think, okay, do I have my climate? Do I have my light? Is there any pest issues? What's up with the nutrient solution? Is it possible that I screwed up the pH on a recent fertigation? You know, we always have this condition of gardening while high that sometimes leads to issues with like the pH of your nutrient solution. To kind of run through that kind of checklist, but. Anyways, I think that's good for climate. Let's think about the generals of climate.
Okay, before we jump back in with Dr. Coco, I'm so excited to tell you about our brand new partner, AC Infinity, everyone. That's right, AC Infinity. You've seen AC Infinity. They are some of the foremost leaders in the world when it comes to cooling and ventilation for all sorts of applications, including your grow room. ACInfinity.com is where you need to go. Growcast20 gets you 20% off your AC Infinity fans, everyone. AC Infinity fans are powerful and they're quiet. They make monitoring temperature and humidity easy. They've got 10 fan speeds, advanced programming, triggers that turn the fan on when the tent gets up to a certain humidity or temperature point, alarms to tell you when things are getting too high. AC Infinity fans are incredible. Check out their Cloudline inline duct fan series. That's their product line that we're going to be wanting using for our applications. And you know why I really love AC Infinity, besides their 2-year warranty, of course, is that they're a cooling company first. They're a fan company first. They weren't just like, okay, growers need fans, let's start building them. They were already leading the industry when it comes to cooling sound equipment and AV components and all sorts of different stuff. And now they see that the grow world is blowing up and they say, hey, we can make the best fan for these guys too. So check it out, acinfinity.com. That's acinfinity.com. Had a little stutter there. Promo code GROWCAST20 for 20% off. You will not regret it, everyone. AC Infinity. All right, let's get back to the show with Dr. Coco. So let's move on to light. What can we see? Yeah, what can we look at when we're coming to light? I mean, obviously distance is a huge thing, especially when you got the HID lighting. But you tell me, where do you first start?
Yeah. So, well, there's two things with HID lighting. You have the heat that they throw at the plants, which is one concern, but you also have the light that they throw at the plants. This is actually one of the topics that I get into in one of those new articles, how much light do you need for indoor cannabis? And we talk about sort of the saturation point for light. And so cannabis can get too much light. Regardless of heat, some growers think that it's just about the heat, but it's really about photosynthesis and you can get too much light. So when photosynthesis is limited by some factor, and there's a number of factors that sort of need to be present in order for the plant to be happily photosynthesizing. It needs carbon dioxide, it needs light, it needs nutrients, it needs water. It needs to be sort of at the right temperature and all these things, right? If anything is limiting the photosynthesis, that will limit the amount of light the plant can sort of safely absorb before it does actual damage to the plant. And usually in our grow spaces, when you start to get really intense in light, the limiting factor is carbon dioxide. Like we've talked about in a couple of episodes, I don't think it's worth supplementing the carbon dioxide for most growers. I think we should just try to sort of accept the limits that are imposed by atmospheric levels of carbon dioxide. But it does create a limit that you can start to burn your plants, get chlorosis and other things. So if you're really pushing, the light distance is insufficient. And I'll tell you when this happens to me, when I have really good plants and I run out of space, right? And so the plants grow up too tall. I raise my plants. I super crop. I fill in the canopy as much as possible. And the plants grow too large. You do the best you can to raise the lights up there. It's important to note that the plant will be suffering from light toxicity sort of before visible symptoms of light burn are evident.
Ah, that's an important distinction.
Yeah. If you start to get like bleaching of leaves and things like that, then you're really well past the optimal level of light in your tent. So just to toss some numbers on this, cannabis photosynthesis is optimized at about 500 micromoles of PPFD. We run usually an average, or we recommend trying to run an average to be fully lit at of 700 PPFD, just so you get 500 everywhere. You're not going to start to see damage until you're above 1,000 PPFD.
Oh, wow.
But when you're sort of above 700, the plant is making efforts to compensate. And the plant is actually reallocating resources and shifting, its prioritization of different parts of the plant and stuff to compensate for receiving so much light in certain places. So you're not really helping the plant when you move past that 700 micromoles of PPFD.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Right. The opposite side, I suppose we should talk about too, that could be a problem with light. This usually affects plants earlier, is not enough light.
Right.
If you're not giving enough light, especially to seedlings and sprouts, you'll get them to sort of stretch ridiculously and become unhealthy. And it's really actually important to try not to, I mean, it's not the end of the world. A lot of growers say, well, you can just sort of bury the stem a little bit on transplanting up. But it really does slow the plants down when they're sort of searching for light and they're putting all their stored energy into trying to sort of grow a big, tall stem in order to find the light that they're looking for. You kind of want the plant early on in its growth to be able to invest some of that energy in root development, not just in sort of shooting up a tall stem. So to balance the light for the seedlings and to give enough light that you're not sort of stretching your seedlings out too much.
Makes sense. Yeah, makes perfect sense. I'm sure that's a tough balance. Is that just something that you growers have to kind of learn on their own? I know.
It depends on what lights you're using, and if you have meters and stuff like that. There's sort of guidelines and you know, various sort of rules about this. But in order to really sort of know exactly what seedlings you would need a light meter. You don't need to be that super precise with it, though.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's just kind of something you learn.
You know, if you're using really low powered lights, if you're using like CFLs, or even sort of like standard LED lights, not LED grow lights, they can be pretty close to plants pretty early on.
Sure, totally.
I often use just the like 23 watt CFL bulbs that are 100 watt equivalents when they're young, and they can be like 2 inches from the plant, those CFLs. So as long as you're not getting it too hot, because CFLs actually do put out a bit of heat. But yeah, they can be pretty close. And I think that unless you're using sort of a high-powered horticultural grow light, you're less likely to really burn the plants from light. You might get them too hot, though, so you still have to worry about that.
Right. That is absolutely right. What do we got? We did climate. We did light.
So the next thing is pests. And man, pests can be a challenge. pests can be a challenge. Well, they can be a challenge to diagnose properly.
Yeah, because they're tricky, right?
Yeah, you're not going to see every pest. There are some pests that you actually have to know are there because of the symptoms that the plant tells you that they're there.
I had broad mites once, and it was the worst infestation that I ever had, and they made my plants do crazy things. Crazy things.
Yeah, broad mites are bad. Mites in general are pretty bad. Spider mites are tough. I mean, they're tiny little things too, so you can often just miss them when you're doing a sort of an investigation. A number of growers will search through their grows looking for mites and not see them, even though they are there. So you have to really do a careful inspection if you suspect mites. Oftentimes, early signs are sort of speckled spots on the leaves, but again, speckled spots on leaves, like a lot of plant symptoms, could be so many different things,
right,
that you're not going to necessarily diagnose that as a mite issue. Other things, we talked about fungus gnats, I think, last time, but fungus gnats often are misdiagnosed as either nutrient burn, if it starts to make the tips sort of wither and mm-hmm. go dark. Sometimes it's misdiagnosed as calcium deficiency, or other things like that, because of the way they affect the leaves, and growers often don't see them. I think gnats are easier to see and probably easier to treat as well.
To control, yeah.
And then you have, aphids. I sometimes suffer with aphid problems.
They're the worst.
Yeah. I would argue that your broad mites are probably worse than my aphids.
Oh, no, I didn't mean literally the worst. Yeah, I would much rather have aphids than the broad mites, that's for sure.
Yeah. Aphids can be bad. Aphids get stuck in your buds, man. So.
Yeah, that's the worst part, is they're little glisteny. You're turning a beautiful nugget, and then you see that glisteny wing shine like a rainbow.
Yeah, that led me to develop the hashtag smoke the bugs. Because and it actually led me to really start thinking about that secondary role of trichomes. The physiological role that trichomes play in the plant.
Stickiness.
I think the stickiness serves as a form of sort of anti-pest measure.
Totally. Yeah, you'll die if you get stuck in that. Well, yeah, welcome to your new home.
You do. They get stuck in the trichomes and they die. And I think that's a real function of the trichomes.
That's really cool.
For the plant. Yeah. When you think about it, one of the ways that we treat aphids is to hang up sticky paper in the, like, fly sticky paper in the tent.
Totally.
That's what your buds are. I mean, it's just like, sticky buds. They serve exactly the same function.
Natural so. Sticky traps. But what about the smoking bugs?
No, it is. Trichomes definitely serve as a natural sticky trap, as much as they serve as like a solar protection against that UV damage and other things like that. Incredible.
What about the smoking bugs, though?
I don't think there's any issue with smoking the bugs. I don't think that growers are particularly fond of it. I think there's an aesthetic appeal
to not having bugs. Yes, for sure. But you're saying who cares? It's just a little bit of like what, you know,
it's a bit of nothing. I think, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of nothing. If you got a couple of aphids stuck in your trichomes, I'm going to cure that, grind it up and aphid or smoke it.
I love it.
I think if they were like encrusted with aphids, that might be a different calculation.
Yes.
I've never really dealt with that kind of a outbreak, but or that kind of an infestation. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to people that do. But if you have a few spreading, and I guess it depends on what you're doing with it. And I'm sure some growers have like, I've lost all credibility to some people at this point. But yeah, I think I'd smoke the bugs.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. So, yeah.
I mean, you know, after I'm camping for a couple of days, I start eating the bugs that fall in my food too. So I don't know. I guess
Dr. Coco's coming out as a weirdo on the show, smoking bugs, yeah, eating bugs.
So, huh?
No, man, I mean, I'm right there with you. I
think
totally
this has to do with my a little bit of my background. And I do field work with farmers. We've talked a little bit about that in the past. And a lot of the farmers I work with in Southern Mexico, various forms of insects are part of their cuisine. They eat chapulines, which are roasted crickets, which are really actually kind of tasty.
Oof,
they cook up kind of grubs and all sorts of things. So I got a little bit more comfortable with thinking about and sort of having insects in my
yeah. What's wrong with it? It's fine. Yeah, totally. No, I'm
I
there
still
with
don't
you.
Eat grubs though, man. I mean, there's a line there, you know.
But you're saying, if you can't consume all your pests in your garden personally, find strategies that will allow you to control your pests.
Pest issues, yeah. And really, I think once you diagnose your issue as being a pest issue, there's a whole world of how to sort of treat different pest issues. I definitely think we could get lost in that world.
Yeah, let's not dive into that. We'll do a different episode on it, but absolutely. Yeah, the idea of incorporating your pest search into your diagnosis process.
To be aware that that's one of the issues that you're thinking about, to be aware that things that sometimes look like nutrient issues are actually pest issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that that's a really important step in sort of the diagnosis part, right? I think that there's lots of different treatments for, you know, each individual pest. Some pests, you can sort of just manage. I usually just sort of manage my aphid problem by putting up sticky paper and other things like that. Or you can even try to manage a fungus gnat population, you know, get, some DE, Dimetrous earth or some other things to sort of try to make a hostile climate or a hostile sort of environment for them.
Yeah. Little sticky traps for the soil. Yeah.
Sort of, but once you start getting into other kinds of treatments, if you're thinking about various forms of foliar applications or of beneficials or sort of other things like that, that really is the whole episode on how to treat pest
done.
Issues.
And there's the next tease. Stay tuned. That. 8 weeks from now, we'll do pest control.
People are going to diagnose their issues now. And they're going to be like, okay, I know what it is. I got to wait 8 weeks to get this. Yeah.
All right. So that's 1, 2, and 3. Nutrients is fifth. What's number 4?
So we're on to root issues.
Roots,
and really, there's a couple of different root issues. Let's talk a little bit about roots here. Roots often, unless you're growing in deep water culture, you're not really going to know what's going on with your roots, right? It's sort of they're the invisible part of your plant that is a really important part of your plant. So a lot of problems that become evident sort of above ground are really related to problems that are affecting the roots mm-hmm. below the media. And it's sort of important to understand what roots need. I think we understand that roots are where water gets absorbed into the plant. And that's an important part. Roots are also where most of the nutrients are absorbed into the plant. But roots also engage in respiration. And that means that they need to be able to absorb oxygen into the roots. So roots need to be able to be in contact with both water and oxygen, either at the same time or in sort of
succession. Yeah, totally.
Right. And if they don't have enough of one or the other, you see problems. You start to see symptoms. Now, underwatering can do all sorts of things. Underwatering, if you're fertigating, can lead to nutrient burn because it increases the concentration of nutrients. And let me just make a quick aside. I probably mentioned this before, but the reason that's the case is because nutrients are taken up by the plant separately than water. And water is almost always taken up by the plant faster than nutrients. So when you let plants sit in water for too long and it gets too dry, the water gets taken out and it leaves sort of a larger percentage of the nutrients behind. When you're dealing with nutrient burn, it's not because of the absolute dose, it's because of the concentration. Ah. And when you're dealing with a sort of a highly concentrated nutrient solution because that you underwatered, that can lead to nutrient burn. If you're not dealing with a nutrient burn issue, if you're just dealing like in soil with, a living soil or some sort of super soil, if you're not fertigating, then your underwatering will usually just be a wilting plant that looks like it needs water. I think most growers have been around houseplants enough to know sort of what an underwatered plant, how an underwatered plant looks.
Right.
Overwatering isn't actually overwatering.
This is an important distinction you brought up on the show before, the suffocation aspect.
Yeah, it's suffocation. It's not because the plants have too much water. Plants always like to be in contact with water. It's because they don't have access to air.
Right.
That's what leads to the problems that we have called overwatering. I mentioned this before. If overwatering, like as in providing too much water, was a problem, then deep water culture wouldn't be possible.
Right, exactly. That was what I stuck with me too. Yeah.
Yeah, they're constantly in the water. The problem there is, and any DWC grower knows this, you need to have air too. You can't just let them sit in the water or the roots will quickly drown and suffer and die in the plant. Starts, showing all sorts of symptoms.
Right.
So you need to balance that air to water ratio, and that's important to understand your media. Different media have different issues with maintaining the correct air to water ratio, and this is really the number one reason that I love cocoa. Cocoa has the best air to water ratio when it's completely saturated.
Right.
So even when it's like totally saturated with water, it still holds on to oxygen in the root zone. And that means that we can just sort of keep it totally saturated with water all the time. We don't have to worry about overwatering. And it allows us to really run and keep everything else dialed in well, because we don't have to worry as much about the air water ratio. If you're in soil, the air to water ratio is like the skill of soil growing.
Right. That's the green thumb.
That's the green thumb. That's absolutely the green thumb. It's knowing when to water. It's knowing sort of how to water. It's knowing how much to water, so that you're not suffocating the roots for too long at a time. And to be honest, usually what happens in soil is they're starved of water right before you irrigate.
Right.
And right after you irrigate, they're starved of oxygen. But then they're given a chance to sort of dry out and get that oxygen back. And then at some point they start to become sort of suffer from lack of water, and then you water again. So you're kind of doing this dance back and forth between not enough water and not enough oxygen. And that's why it's a skill. I mean, if you're really good at sort of managing that skill and keeping the plants in the happy zone, then you can grow really quick plants in soil.
Right.
I think this is the number one reason that sort of hydro grows, cocoa grows, can be so much faster, is because the plants aren't sort of constantly being slowed down by lack of water or lack of oxygen.
That's really interesting. And wouldn't you also say, let's take a turn before nutrients, but also kind of as we enter nutrients, the treatment of different problems, especially when it comes to nutrients, going to be vastly different. And in a cocoa setup, one of the best or most interesting things is when you apply nutrients, your plant receives those nutrients. In a soil setup with synthetics, yeah, there's a little bit of a buffer. And then with a super soil setup, if you're going to like amend your plants, if you're going to amend your soil or something like that, that's like a delayed timer. It's like the exact opposite of the instant fertigation of the cocoa.
Yeah, no, that really is the difference. And I think that, you know, if you compare like the water only super soil or even a living soil that you would basically water only or provide teas to or other things like that, they're really easy as long as everything goes well.
Right.
They can be easy in terms of mixing your nutrients because you're not really mixing nutrients. They can be challenging still, like we just talked about, the art of watering effectively. But it's easy to sort of mix the water and to kind of know how to handle that grow.
Right.
But yeah, like you say, as soon as something goes south, it can be extremely difficult to
adjust on the fly.
Adjust to fix that issue. I often think of growing in hydro and growing either in DWC or in cocoa. They're both sort of hydroponic grow styles. It's more like driving a sports car than like riding on the train, right? So if you're riding on the train, you get on the train and then you really hope that the train goes to where you want to go. I mean, you're kind of out of control at that point. You're just sort of on the train. When you're driving a sports car, it requires you to pay a hell of a lot more attention. Right.
Right.
You need to pay attention to sort of how you're driving the whole way.
When you're stepping on the gas or the brake.
Sideways, yeah, totally. You're in control. You get to sort of slow down the car, get back on the road, speed up again. Like, you're completely sort of in control of a hydroponic grow.
Sure.
But you're in control like the whole time. So you have to sort of stay in control. You can't go to sleep as much on it.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No, totally.
There's one more thing I want to get into with roots before we completely dive in. And this is sort of related, though, in a lot of ways to the nutrient issues also. And that's root stunting. Root stunting is something that I see a lot, actually. And it's one of the easier things to diagnose. Root stunting generally leads to dwarfism above ground. So,
is this like when you got a little dud plant?
What's that?
Is this like when you got a little dud plant, or is this more like it's just not growing as vigorously as it should?
It's like everything's miniaturized,
right?
So like the node spacing is really tight, and the leaves are really tiny, and it looks like a miniaturized version of a plant.
Someone hit with a shrink ray. Right.
Right. And oftentimes they do grow slow and they're clearly kind of suffering from other problems. So that's almost always that sort of dwarfism in the plants. That's almost always a result of root stunting. Either physical damage to the roots, or the roots were burned at some point.
How could that happen? Like during transplantation, you damage them, or?
Yeah, you could potentially damage roots by a sloppy transplant. That's usually occurs if you try to transplant too early, and the media kind of falls apart on you as you're transplanting.
The root ball isn't as strong and stable as it should be.
Yeah. So usually if you wait long enough, you won't get that. If you're in soil, though, and you get your roots bound, it can create the same kind of the same kind of root stunting symptoms from bound roots. But physical damage during transplant is certainly one of the ways that this happens. The other way is nutrients that are too strong. So if you think about it, it's like putting salt on a slug, right? Don't do that. It's cruel. But what happens to your roots is the same thing. I mean, if young, yeah, tender roots come into contact with really salty water, it dehydrates and shrivels them.
Wow.
Yeah, and that stunts the whole sort of growth of the plant. So when you end up with a plant that's stunted like that, you want to flush because it very well may be some sort of high electrical conductivity or some sort of saltiness issue. And it's tough to sort of recover. It's going to take time to recover. You can eventually get the plants growing well again. But you got to realize that they have underdeveloped root systems, and an underdeveloped root system is going to make it harder for them to take up nutrients. So you kind of have to nurse them. In coco, when I have a plant that has root issues, I keep it at a lower EC. I try to fertigate it more frequently. And I try to make sure that the vapor pressure deficit doesn't get too high, requiring it to sort of pull too much water through itself. But oftentimes, they're not going to catch up to plants that didn't get root stunted if you have like this happened to one and not the others.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Root stunting, not a term that's specifically come up on this show before. So that's a nice little exploration there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. It's definitely one of the issues to sort of be aware of. I want to stress this too. I recommend transplanting to everybody. I've got an article up on transplanting. I recommend transplanting autoflowers. I recommend transplanting if you're in soil, if you're in coco. Plants really do grow best when they're in appropriately sized containers. The real risk that occurs for root stunting when you're transplanting, there's really two of them. One is, like we talked about, you transplant too soon and the root ball sort of falls apart in your hands as you're making the transfer, and some of the roots or some of the real sort of tap roots can rip, and that can be a problem. If you're just sort of cutting the roots around the edge of the pot, that's not a problem at all. We're talking about damage like inside the root ball, inside the meat.
That makes sense.
Now, the other thing that happens during transplanting is growers may transplant into a media that is too high, too hot, basically, too hot with newts, too high in electrical conductivity. And that sort of sudden change from like a seedling pot that has really low electrical conductivity into a container that's at a much higher electrical conductivity can shock and dehydrate the roots. They'll prevent them from growing into that new media and lead to symptoms of dwarfism. So as long as you're sort of careful, you wait long enough in each container before potting up, and you make sure that the new container is prepared similarly to the old container. There's no big shift in the sort of media that you're moving from. The plant shouldn't have an issue at all.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic overview. Avoid that dwarfism for your plants, folks. Unless that's what you're going for. Unless you want a mini cannabis plant, then go for it.
And some people do. There's the Instagram account that grows the plants in shot glasses or whatever. And that's what they're
really?
Doing.
That's great.
They're growing dwarfs.
That's cool. All right, final one. Get on to the CalMag deficiency, man. Where's that CalMag?
everybody says
CalMag deficiency.
Well,
what about that?
I will say that CalMag deficiency in coco is sort of one of the exceptions. It's something that is so kind of predictable that it can be gone. We can skip a lot of the steps. Yeah. And if you're growing in coco, you can think right about, do I have a calcium or a magnesium?
And then double back. Okay, I got it.
But that's actually one of the easier symptoms to diagnose. And it's one of the easier symptoms potentially to treat. If you're in coco that's unbuffered and you're really suffering from CalMag deficiency, you may just have to sort of manage it. But it actually does get easier to manage as the plants get sort of later into the grow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some things you can do there. I have a couple articles on this. I have an article on why we need to use CalMag and COCO that explores the cation exchange issues. And my seedlings article, the how to grow seedlings in COCO core, really talks about how to manage those calcium and magnesium deficiencies.
Nice.
So that's one of the, it's worthy of its own kind of line item when we're thinking about nutrient issues, mm-hmm. I think. You know, the one that's going to affect most growers, if you're mixing nutrient solutions, so if you're fertigating, is pH and pH lockout. Oftentimes when growers have issues that look like micronutrient deficiencies or various macronutrient deficiencies, it's really because of pH.
Right.
And so that's one of the things to, when you're first thinking about sort of what could be going on with your grow, when you think it might be something to do with nutrient solution, consider the pH issues. And it's not just the current pH of the nutrient solution. It's sort of, if the pH got out of range in a recent fertigation, you might now be seeing the sort of symptoms as a result of that.
Right. That's an important distinction. Yeah.
pH lockout can be persistent after sort of it occurs. And it may take a while for the symptoms to show up after the sort of the aggravating event occurred. So think back to the last several days and think, you know, was I staying on top of this? Did my pH get out of range? Is my pH meter calibrated properly? You know, am I really on top of these things? Because oftentimes, I mean, I've had that a lot, like more than a handful of times, to talking to a grower and I'm like, I think this is pH. They're like, no, my pH is good. I think this is pH. And then like half an hour later, they're like, oh, I just recalibrated my pen and it was off by, you know, a full point or something. So, you know, calibrate your pen, make sure those things are dialed in. pH lockout is in a hydro grow pretty easy to solve. It's easier to solve if you have a flushing agent and you can just basically almost rinse them with a flushing agent should break most lockouts in a hydro grow.
Yeah.
In soil, it can be more difficult. And it depends on sort of how you're fertigating or how you're using nutrients. Mm-hmm. pH is less of a problem usually, although it's one of these things with the built-in soils that you have less control over.
Yeah, that's true. So
pH is important. And that's one of the things that is sort of when we talk about driving your race car, driving your sports car, right? It's managing pH and making sure that the pH of the nutrient solution is always in range. Now, in a COCO grow, I advise growers not to worry about the pH of the runoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really think you should only worry about the pH of the inflow. There's a number of reasons why the pH of the runoff may be out of range.
Really?
They're not all problems, and growers can get themselves into big problems if they try to adjust runoff pH by changing inflow pH.
Give me a specific example of that, would you?
Yeah. So they noticed that their runoff pH is high. Okay. So say their runoff pH is, and they're trying to be between 5.7 and 6.4. And they're getting runoff pH that's 6.6. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they're like, okay, well, I'm just going to start feeding at 5.7 every day until this comes down off of 6.6. Mm. And it doesn't. Even if they just stayed there at 5.7, that's a problem. We don't want to just drill in at the bottom end of the range constantly. The inflow is more important than the runoff.
Okay.
So what they might do then is be like, okay, I'm going to start going to like 5.3 or 5.2 in order to get this runoff pH down because it's persistently too high. And that can actually create lockout. It can cause some nutrients to precipitate.
Right. Okay. So, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what growers start to do, right? And I tell them, don't even measure it. Because if you measure it and you see it's 6.6, you're going to start, I mean, we're just like this. We're going to be like, I'm going to go low.
I might as well lowball it a little bit. Exactly.
I'm going to go low.
Good point.
When you what you actually should be doing is varying your inflow pH sort of throughout the range, regardless of what your runoff pH is doing.
Wow.
Runoff pH can be expected to run high in cocoa in a lot of situations, and it's often not a problem. That's almost built into the recommended range that we're sort of suggesting you to run with.
Interesting, man. I absolutely love it. What other thoughts do you have on nutrients?
So that's, I think the main one is pH lockout. There are a few issues that happen with uptake that's not really related to lockout. I hear growers often talk about increased calcium needs late in flower, especially in plants grown in cocoa. What's probably going on there is that the calcium is, the uptake of calcium is being affected by the high EC or the high phosphorus of the flowering blend. So calcium uptake, calcium's a challenge. I mean, calcium is sort of the one balance that we do in cocoa that's a little bit challenging. We need to provide it because the cocoa always wants calcium. But it causes the EC to be pretty high. And if the EC is too high, the plant won't be able to absorb calcium. So just to be aware that if you're having calcium issues, sort of late in flower, that's probably related to high EC.
That's interesting. Not a
there's
lack
a few
of calcium.
Other uptake problems like that. And oftentimes, you know, oftentimes growers see an uptake problem, which is causes a deficiency. They see calcium deficiency occurring in their plant, and their instinct is to increase
add more
the
calcium. Calcium, right? Right,
which causes the EC to go higher
and lock out calcium,
right? Which causes the problem to get worse. So,
very interesting, yeah,
right. When calcium issues, especially in a cocoa grow late in flowering, what you really want to try to do is lower your EC. And then there's various sort of nutrient element ratio problems. This is a bigger problem if you're using a super soil. But nutrient element ratio is like the NPK, but it's a lot more than just NP and K. It's everything else and the ratios that they're existing in within the nutrients that are provided to the plant. You can get toxicities if certain nutrients are too high. The most common one that we see is nitrogen toxicity, especially sort of during the flowering period. You see really dark green leaves. That's indicative of nitrogen toxicity.
Right.
It's more common that nutrient element ratios are related to deficiencies. And, you know, usually it's because of inappropriate fertilizers. If you're using or you're not following the feed charts, that's what the feed charts are all about. And that's sort of what, you know, specially born formulated nutrients, if you're fertigating, are all about, is establishing the appropriate nutrient element ratio. Sometimes even if you're following, even if you're using good nutrients and following the recipe, you might get out of whack with the plant. If you switch nutrients too early or too late, onto the early bloom cycle, especially, you can end up seeing some deficiencies or some slight signs of toxicities occurring, just sort of being out of range with it. The other issue that might happen with nutrient element ratio is you might be crossing brands, causing lockouts or conflicts between sort of different brands and the way those nutrients are balanced. And some supplements can throw off nutrient element ratio. Depending on that, certain CalMag supplements are really high in nitrogen, for example. And if you're in cocoa and using a CalMag product that's high in nitrogen, you can end up with nitrogen toxicity.
Interesting. I feel like we're here, so I'm going to say it. I'd like to get your take on it. What about mixing nutrients? And I know specifically silica products can pose a bit of an issue. Yep. Can you touch on that?
Yeah. So I have, and I'll get to plug my video on this. I have a YouTube video on how to mix nutrient solutions.
Oh, that's right.
That I actually made way back right when we were first starting Cocoa for Cannabis. There's an article associated with that, how to mix nutrients.
It holds up. People should go check it out.
Yep. It's nice. Just actually one of our original URLs. So that's / mix newts. And yeah, so silica should, if you're adding silica or silicon, it should always be added first to as plain of water as you can get. Silicon is sort of a difficult element to get it to dissolve properly. Uh-huh. And so that's the issue that we're dealing with there. I advise mixing it first and giving at least an hour for the silica to dissolve.
Whoa, that's longer than I've heard. Okay, I'm glad you said that. That's a little spicy drop.
It's a bit of a safety guarantee. What's going to happen if you don't wait? Is you're not going to get the benefit of the silica as much.
Is that what it is? I thought that it like bonded somehow to other nutrients.
It can. Silica can create lockout problems. Uh-huh. Generally, that would occur from mixing it out of order. Not giving it enough time is going to mean that it doesn't dissolve properly. When you start adding other nutrients, it will precipitate and it won't be uptaken by the plant. So you're just kind of wasting your silicon if you don't give it time to dissolve, to sort of sit
Love
in the
it.
Water.
An hour. There you go.
An hour is probably longer than you may need, but you know, it's an hour and I recommend probably taking that hour. Just make sure you get the best.
Hey, I get it.
Oftentimes I mix water now in a bucket. I'll often pour the bucket, put my silicon in it and then mix the rest of the nutrients like the next day. It doesn't really matter when, as long as it has had enough time.
Nice.
If you're adding a CalMag supplement, which you need to if you're growing in coco, that should come next. That should come before you add the base nutrient products.
Right.
Among the base nutrient products, it's important to always add micro first. After that, to be perfectly honest with you, the order matters less. You should add the rest of the base nutrients, usually micro and then grow and then the bloom. And then a bloom booster if you're using a bloom booster. Mm-hmm. At that point, you've basically set your nutrient element ratio and you can add other things like humic acids amino things or whatever else you want to add. Wetting agents can be added at that point.
Nice, man. That's the order that we've always kind of stood by. So I'm glad to hear that you're also on that same page. That's cool.
Yep. And yeah, order is one of the important things to be aware of. Electrical conductivity is an important thing to be aware of. So to make sure that the overall nutrient solution isn't too salty. The nutrient element ratio, that's sort of the specific quantities of each element as they sort of relate to the other elements, right? So the ratio is more important than the absolute amounts. That's another important thing. And of course, pH, which we already talked about. So there's really four elements to making sure that you have good balance, good, well-mixed nutrients.
Making sure the nutrients are on point. And that wraps up the 5 points. What an incredible overview, Dr. Coco. Any final words on diagnosing, on treating your plants, or just on being Dr. Coco?
Well, I'll put out a shout out here from my chat room. If you got issues that you want to diagnose, I still think that our live cannabis chat room is the best place on the internet to come and do that. Post your pictures up there. There's always growers that, are good growers, and we have grower badges in our chat room. So you can see when, as growers gain experience and sort of build a reputation in our forum, they earn additional badges. So you can see if it's a proven grower, an expert grower, a known grower,
cool,
a practicing grower that's giving you, or a new grower that's giving you advice, and kind of be a little bit more confident in sort of what's being told to you. But the growers that hang out in the chat room love to help each other, love to help new growers come and sort of get through these issues. And I think that having that live back and forth is really is such an advantage when you're trying to diagnose a plant issue. I mean, first of all, you as the grower want immediate feedback.
You as the diagnosers, you need follow-up questions. You got follow-up questions.
Yeah, we have follow-up questions. Yeah. I mean, you never, and if you try to provide, like a lot of forums say, provide all the information you could possibly think of, that's kind of a pain in your butt. It's also, we don't want to read all this sort of useless information. about
to
other
important
things sometimes
stuff, right?
too. And yeah. Yeah. So it's just an easier way, I think, to
love it, man.
To be able to quickly diagnose plant issues like this.
CocoForCannabis.com is where they can find it, right?
Yeah. CocoForCannabis.com/chat.
Love it.
We'll get you to our chat room and, you know, stop by, check it out. Just you can watch for a while without registering. And you'll get a feel for sort of the spirit of collaboration that pervades in our chat room.
Love it, man. And I love our spirit of collaboration. I look forward to having you back on soon. Let us know what we can do for you. And I love this powerful combination of Coco for Cannabis and GrowCast.
I love it too, Jordan. Yeah, we get growers every day that tell us that they, you know, heard me on GrowCast.
Ah, nice.
They're over, you know, creating journals on our forum and joining our challenges and all the rest of that. So yeah, as we start to get geared up for the Spring Autoflower Challenge, man, we got to figure out some ways to get the whole GrowCast universe involved in the Spring Autoflower Challenge.
Hell so, to the yes, everybody. You heard it, and yeah, you'll be hearing me talking about it as I join up. How about Instagram at Coco for Cannabis?
Instagram, I am Dr. MJ Coco on Instagram. Please be patient if you direct message me on Instagram. It's not that I don't love you. It's really sort of an overwhelming amount of feedback I can sometimes get on Instagram. So, or questions and comments.
Totally.
And stuff. I can get way behind. It's better probably to come to the chat room on Coco for Cannabis. But yeah, follow me on Instagram, Dr. MJ Coco. Follow me on Twitter at Dr. MJ Coco. My wife is now sort of running our Facebook page. So if you're into Facebook, you can check out Dr. MJ Coco on Facebook too.
Nice. Go and give him a follow, everybody. Of course, I'm the same way though, Dr. Coco. I want to say if I'm not responding to you, one of the things that I worry about the most is the last GrowPass 5K giveaway winner friended me on Facebook, and I saw the request and I said, I'm going to get to that later. And I looked later and it was gone. And I had this moment where I was like, oh no, he thinks I'm an asshole. So, so it's one of those things where I don't know if it disappeared or like he retracted, but I don't get to that stuff as quickly. And I want to back you up, Dr. Coco, which is it's nothing personal. It's just me being bad at tech and slow.
have sympathy. I mean, just you know, when I started to add up all of the different sort of avenues that people use to try to get in touch with me, and like I want to be sensitive and reply to all these different ways, but it can get kind of overwhelming.
Totally.
So know that we both, Jordan and I, we have lots of grower love for everybody out there, and
exactly,
we'll do our best.
Totally. At GrowCast on Instagram, at Jordan River IG. I don't post much, but you can get at me, direct message me. And yeah, that's all. This is Dr. Coco and Jordan River signing off, wishing you the best of luck in your grows, everyone. Be safe and grow smarter.
Grower love, everyone.
That's a wrap, folks. That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Special shout out to our brand new partner, AC Infinity. Loving this new partnership. Check out our YouTube channel. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We got a couple videos up there. If you want to check us out on the video platform, we're going to try to add more of that coming in 2020. GrowCastPodcast.com/YouTube, or just search us on YouTube. You'll find our channel. You can support GrowCast through Patreon very easily by going to patreon.com/GrowCast. And we will not only shower you with love and admiration for supporting the show, but we'll also give you 2 tickets per month into the GrowCast 5K giveaway. That's right, you get a chance to win a $2,000 prize pack just for supporting the show through Patreon. Shout out to Start to Finish Consulting for all your needs. Any situation, any setup, start to finish, we got you covered. At start2finish710 on Instagram. Shout out to Jay Blanked for doing the beat, soundcloud.com/JayBlanked. And that's all, folks. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope you're doing incredible things in your garden. Best of luck to you. Bye-bye.